You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Kushan Avidar, in for Allison Stewart. To end today's Women's History Month producer picks, we're going to discuss a groundbreaking album that just turned 25. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill became the first number one album for a female solo rapper. It also won Hill Album of the Year at the Grammys in 1999. Here to tell us more about the interview you're about to hear for our Silver Liner Notes series is All of It producer Simon Close.
Lauryn Hill was just 23 years old when she released The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, but even at that point, she was already an award-winning singer and rapper as a member of the Fugees. Still, 2 years after the second and final Fugees album had come out, and 1 year after Wyclef Jean's solo debut, the pressure was on for Lauryn Hill to prove herself, and she definitely did. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill debuted at number one on the Billboard album charts. The following year, Hill earned 10 Grammy nominations and walked away with 5 wins for Album of the Year, Artist of the Year, Best R&B Album, and 2 Song Awards for the album's big hit, Doo Wop That Thing. Last year, my All of It teammate Luke Green and I got the chance to see Lauryn Hill perform live in Philadelphia with the Fugees as a surprise guest, just a couple months before her solo debut turned 25. As we head into this next segment, you'll actually hear a little bit of the tape we grabbed from that show of Hill celebrating the milestone. Here's Kushan Avidar in conversation with writers Hanif Abdurraqib and Karen Goodmarable for our album anniversary series, Silver Liner Notes.
25 years of the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Philosophy, possibly speak tongues, beat drums, Abyssinian Street Baptist, Baptist and fine linen. From the beginning, my practice extending across the atlas. I begat this, flipping in together on the dirty mattress. You can't match this.
Hanif, coming out of the intro, the first actual song on the album is Lost Ones, which in an album that spans rap and soul falls way more on the rap side of thing. And in an interview with Flaunt Magazine, you were asked about the top 5 MCs of all time. And you said, it changes by the day. And today, in no order, I'd say Rakim, Ghostface, Slick Rick, MC Light, and Lauryn Hill. Why does Lauryn Hill belong in that top 5?
Well, for me, I think, so when I go back to Say the Score, I think there is... within a group setting, it's actually a group that is more than 2 people. I don't know if there's ever been a better individual performance on a group record than Lauryn Hill performs in Score. And that spans any genre. I think what makes her good and great for me and is someone who's worthy of, you know, of course, top 5 MCs are, it's fluid. And for me, it does really shift daily, but what puts her in that conversation kind of always is her dexterity, lyrical dexterity, the ferocity with which she kind of attacks beats, the beats never get on top of her. She is clever and playful, even though I do think that she's vocally assertive, you know. She kind of, you know, I think the way she kind of stacks syllables and rhymes, in the Fuji Lab remix, there's a like Catch Me Mud, Mitsubishi, Sushi, Bumpa Fuji's, you know, it's kind of everything so compact and rhymes kind of collapse on top of each other. And Lost Ones is, you know, I think Lost Ones is one of her great performances because it does walk that line between being firm and assertive, but not preachy. And there's moments of lyrical brilliance, there's sharp narration, verse 2 specifically. I think, you know, there's, I think when I think about Lauryn Hill, I think of her as an MC first, and I know that if we were to maybe pull apart her entire catalog, there might, you know, she might be rapping less than singing, you know. You know, including the Unplugged record and the work on the 2 Fugees records and Miseducation, it would be close. It'd be close to even, I think. But every time she raps, she really makes the most of those performances.
So let's listen to some of those characteristics that you're describing in action. Here is Lost Ones. Let's hear a clip.
Yo, Lauryn, Lionel, Philly, see it?
It's funny how money changes situation. Miscommunication lead to complication. My emancipation don't fit your equation. I was on the humble, you on every station. Someone play young Lauren like she done. But remember not to game the one of the sun. Everything you did has already been done. I know all the tricks from bricks to Kingston. My ting done, major king.
So we're talking about the miseducation of Lauryn Hill. My guest is poet and essayist Hanif Abdurraqib, and joining us now is journalist Karen Good Marable, who interviewed Hill in 1998 when the album came out for a Vibe magazine cover story. Karen, welcome to All of It.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for joining us. And in my hand right now, I am lucky to be holding that Vibe cover story that you wrote right here. And I look through it. It's wonderful. I'd love to ask you something. I think everyone would love to hear from you. What stands out to you now about the conversation you and Lauren had when you wrote this piece?
You know, when I think about it now, I think about, well, she was, you know, she was really young. You know, you forget that she was only 23, I think, at the time, maybe 24. But the other thing that was kind of beautiful about it that you don't see much anymore is the intimacy of the interview. You know, like it was in South Orange, New Jersey, at her mama's house. We were sitting on the steps. Her kid, you know, her kid was there, Zion, who was like, and I think she was pregnant as well, but hadn't like disclosed it yet. But I remember that intimacy. And that's the kind of, you know, in magazine terms, you used to call that color, you know, that you can't get anymore in interviews. But it was a beautiful moment.
And Karen, Hanif, here are some of the texts that we've got coming in. I'll read a few off. First one, I was a new teacher in the Lower East Side, and I would teach songs from the record to my high schoolers in a poetry unit and play the album all the time. Caps lock there. My name is Denise from New Jersey, and I loved Lauryn Hill, all in caps, from the time she was with the Fugees. Her voice was strong, and she was little but had a badass look. I was small and assertive, so I felt represented. I loved hearing a strong woman rapping and singing. Karen, I'd love to know, does anything from those texts stand out to you?
Well, yeah, I get it. I mean, I think that then, and even now, Lauren is special, but like it was crazy. She was a supernova. You know, the album was also super empowering in a way that, I mean, I think that was deliberate, but I think that Lauren was standing in her power and kind of at the height. I don't want to say the height of her powers because, again, she was really, really young, but she was up there. Like she was like, OK, here we are. And so I guess I would say the height of her powers at that moment, like she had risen to that. And it was stunning to see and just in how she presented herself on stage and you know, like, I mean, she was a fashion girl. But she was also kind of giving me Rita Marley from the i3s, you know what I'm saying? She was giving me Vintage, but she was giving me, you know, Label and she's this brown skin, dreadlocked girl or young woman who wasn't afraid of color. She just sort of represented a certain type of woman at that time that we didn't see that much. You know, it wasn't promoted that much. And so, yeah, I get it. Like it was star power. I remember her on the cover of Time. I remember her on the cover of Harper's Bazaar. You know, I remember her on the cover of Rolling Stone. Like it was crazy and it was beautiful. And it was right. It made sense.
We asked you to tell us if there was a specific song that you felt especially connected to, and you highlighted the song When It Hurts So Bad. I'd love to play a clip, maybe in like 10 seconds. What do you think you would want to say about the song before we play it?
Well, you know, what I thought, what I think about that song is it was her being extremely vulnerable, you know. And I would like to say, too, that in our she's talking about unrequited love. And but she took all of that into the song. She never like sold out folks in the even in the interview that she and I had. Like, she didn't sell anybody out. She didn't name names. But she took it to the song, and that's the beauty of that. That's why I like this song.
Let's hear it.
When it hurts so bad,
when it hurts so
when
bad,
when it hurts so bad,
when it hurts so bad,
why does it feel so good?
When it hurts so bad, when it hurts so bad,
when it hurts so bad,
when it hurts so bad,
when it hurts so bad,
when it hurts so bad,
when it hurts so bad,
why does it feel so bad?
That was wonderful. Karen, thank you so much for hopping on.
Hi, Karen, by the way. Hi, Karen. It's good to hear you.
Hey, Hanif. How you doing?
Good, good.
So, Hanif, we're getting a lot of callers in. I'd love to get to another one. Let's hear from Mara in New Jersey. Hi, Mara.
Hi.
So, tell us, what's your relationship with the album?
Oh, my goodness. I was sharing with the screener the from the outset, this powerful, tiny but powerful Black woman who came on, and this album was such a testament to Black love, I believe. There's a song I tried to recall with the screener, Sweetest Thing I've Ever Known, and it was just this, and then she became someone who like got with Jamaican royalty, and at the time it was just such a testament to just being who you are, as powerful as you are, and loving what you have and what's open to you, and it was just amazing to me.
Oh. Do you remember the place where you first heard that album, Mara?
Oh, I was just out of high school in Jamaica, so yeah.
Well, Mara, thank you so much. And Hanif, I want to touch on something that Mara was talking about. It sounds like this spans so many generations. Can you talk a little bit about the sense you get regarding where this album stands with young listeners and later generations?
I think there's something about, you know, when this album came out, it was generationally expansive, and in part because of what Karen was talking about, where, you know, Lauryn Hill is really schooled in the performance of, you know, she's in the lineage of old soul singers, you know, and not just soul singers. I mean, that, you know, that, you know, that cover, not just the Roberta Flack cover, the Killing Me Softly cover, but the Four Seasons cover, Can't Take My Eyes Off You, on Miss Education. All these things were kind of transformed in the way that only she could, but they were done in a spirit that I think really honored the original forms of the songs, which got people in the door who might otherwise not have a high interest in Lauryn Hill. But I think people, you know, especially I think Black listeners really appreciate singers, and singers who sing with a real level of soul and attention to detail and care for the language they're singing. And so, yeah, I mean, this album, I remember when it came out, like, I remember being in school and older teachers listening to it, as well as young folks listening to it on the bus. Now, I think people had different approaches to it. You know, like, me and my friends loved Lost Ones and Doo-Wop, you know, while some of the older folks maybe loved Nothing Even Matters or anything like that. But it was still this album that managed to have something for a wide range of people. And Miss Hill, as a performer, I think, and as a writer, is someone who is unique because she seems so aware of what her influences are musically, and not wanting to stray from them too far, but also injecting some of her own unique brilliance into those influences.
Mm. Now, when you think of those personal connections, there's one caller that I think has her own personal connection. Let's talk to Alicia in Queens, New York. Hi, Alicia.
Hi there. Good to be with you.
Thank you. What's your relationship with the album?
Well, I grew up in South Orange, New Jersey, and I was just one generation after Miss Hill in the community. And so I was 10 in 1998, and you know, my friends and I kind of grew up with this album, and I grew up to be a poet. So lovely to hear Hanif speak about this work, because it's bringing together two of my most important things. But I grew up to be a poet, and I think that listening to Miss Hill's real attention to detail and her specificity, I'm thinking of like Every Ghetto, Every City, where she's name dropping South Orange Avenue and name dropping, you know, particular locations from our hometown. That kind of naming and attention to detail lets her work be both really, really specific and also really universal, because every hometown has their, you know, has their name drop locations. And I appreciate hearing about how Miss Hill's performances really display her influences, but I think it's also cool to think about who she is influenced. And I grew up in church youth group with a woman named Solana Rowe, who now goes by SZA. Mm. And SZA was also, you know, just like same age as me, growing up in this same artistic community. And I definitely think of her as kind of an heir to Miss Lauryn Hill's work.
Wow, two musicians and a poet from the same community. That's a vibrant community you're a part of, Alicia. That's wonderful. So, Hanif, how does that resonate with you as you hear Alicia talk about how it's so connected and that this community kind of brings out this beautiful artistry?
Yeah, well, I mean, one, I think that is equal parts unique. And then, though, if you look at... it's also in a way, depending on the community, you know, we think about like pockets of artistic communities in New York, kind of uncommon, which is great. Right. But I do want to touch on a thing. I am also interested to look at and think about Miss Hill's tree of influence, the folks that she has influenced. Mm. And I don't know if part of me thinks that there are a great handful of those artists now. And I think the great thing about her, the endurance of her work, and in a way, I don't like to use the word mythology because it treats it as though she is like no longer existing, but the kind of larger than life aspect of the miseducation of Lauryn Hill specifically, not just in terms of its accolades, but its actual enduring quality. I think we'll be seeing people influenced by this record for years and years, like folks who are maybe just getting started now in music, or folks who haven't even gotten started yet. This is one of those albums that I think, one, it's kind of mind-blowing that it's 25 years old to think about, but I think this is one of those records that, you know, the folks of us who grew up with it, some of us are parents now, some of us are elder community members to people now. This is one of those records you hand down. I remember getting handed down records when I was a kid, records that my parents loved. And because this endures and still today sounds as good as it did when it came out, I think this is one of those records that will live and live and live. And that means that the tree of influence that Miss Hill has created will keep growing.
That was my conversation with Hanif Abdurraqib and Karen Good Marable for the 25th anniversary of The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. And that's our Producer Picks episode for today, featuring All of It producers Jordan Loff and Simon Close. We'll be back here live on Monday, so thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.